in Israel's hope, which unites us in fellowship one with the other and separates us from the mother of harlots and her daughters. That is the one great thing that separates us from Christendom, is the glorious hope of Israel. Now in this chapter there are powerful lessons and exhortations, provoking us, brethren and sisters, to be steadfast and unmovable in the hope of our calling. And we certainly need that today. There's so few brethren and sisters that understand the truth in the brotherhood today. It's very sad. Steadfast and unmovable in the hope of our calling. We can't just drift into the kingdom, as so many think. Baptized, we're all right. We can't drift into the kingdom. Just look at the words of the Master himself as recorded in Luke chapter 13. Luke chapter 13. And verse 23. Then said one unto him, Master, are there few that be saved? And you remember else another time he says, many are called, few are chosen. And he said unto them, strive to enter in at the strait gate. For many, I say unto you, will seek to enter in and shall not be able. The difference between striving and seeking. Many seeking, oh yes, many want to be there, but they're not willing to strive, to agonize. That's what it means, to agonize, to get into the kingdom. And that's what we've got to do, agonize to get into the kingdom. Now, Paul starts off this chapter, holy brethren, holy. Holy. We've got to be holy. There's no hope if we're not. Holy, brethren. We must be holy. The Apostle Peter, the first epistle of Peter, and the first chapter. First of Peter, chapter 1, verses 15 and 16. But as he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation or way of life. Because it is written, back in the law, be ye holy, for I am holy. Now we, brothers and sisters, are as holy priests, ministering in the holy place. And we don't think about that enough. We are priests ministering in the holy place. The Apostle Peter again, he speaks about the holy nation, holy priests. The first of Peter again, and the second chapter. We all know these words. Yet Paul, Peter says we have to remind ourselves, stir up our memories. The first of Peter chapter 2, verse 5. Ye also as living stones are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus anointed. And again in verse 9, ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, out of all the nations, this is what we should be, an holy nation, a special people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvellous light. And chapter 3 and verse 11, let him eschew evil and do good. Well, that wasn't the verse I wanted. Now, we are holy. We must be holy and holy priests. Holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling. That was the second of Peter. Just go back. The second of Peter, chapter 3 and verse 11. Second of Peter, chapter 3, verse 11. Seeing that... No, that isn't the one. I'm sorry about that. Now, we will carry on. Holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling. Now, this means that we are sharers. Partakers, sharers of this high calling. The Apostle Paul, in the Epistle to the Philippians, Philippians chapter 3, and verse 13, chapter 3, verse 13, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, and reach forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark of the prize of the high calling. This high calling, pressing toward it, which is of God in Christ Jesus. Now, the Amplified is rather interesting on that latter part of verse 13. One thing I do, it is my one aspiration, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead. Now, is that what we're doing? Straining forward? Agonizing? Like an athlete? Doing his utmost to win the prize? Is that what we're doing? That's what we've got to do to attain to that glory. There's no other way, brethren and sisters. We can't, as we said at the beginning, we can't just drift along and think we're all right. We've got to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. Apostle Paul says elsewhere. So this high calling. Now the word calling, which occurs, is klesis, occurs 11 times. And there's another word, kletos, called, that occurs 11 times. It's an invitation. And it's contained in the word ecclesia. Now, I always feel sad when I hear brethren read church. It really grates with me, and I expect it does with most of us. Because it doesn't convey the idea that the word ecclesia does. Ek, klesis, an assembly of separated ones. And that's what we are. We have been separated from the world as Israel were. Called out from the world to be his special treasure. That's not contained in the word church. Out of separation. Now, the Apostle Paul tells us that we've got to walk worthy of this high calling. Worthy of it. Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 1. Here's this high calling, this vocation. I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you, I'm exhorting you, that ye walk worthy of the vocation, this klesis, this invitation, this calling. Walk worthy of it, wherewith ye are called. And it's interesting how often, you look up this, how often this walking is referred to. I've just made a little few notes in the bottom of my margin. Walk worthy. walk worthy of God. Walk in the Spirit. Walk in the light. Walk as children of light. Walk in love. Walk circumspectly. Walk humbly. That's what we must do. Walk worthy of this high and noble calling. We're not our own. We've been purchased, and what a price for our purchase. Now the Apostle Paul goes on to say, consider the apostle and high priest of our profession, our calling. Consider him. And that means to thoroughly perceive or observe. And the word occurs actually 14 times, so you've got 2 7s. And it's translated discover. It's translated perceive. And it's also translated behold. Now this is an interesting one. And in Acts chapter 7, Stephen is going through the history of Israel just before he was stoned to death, because they couldn't listen to him anymore. They shut their ears and they ran upon him and stoned him to death. And he was only speaking the truth. Acts chapter 7, and here is Stephen talking about Moses at the bush. Verse 30, and when 40 years were expired, there appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai an angel of Yahweh in a flame of fire in a bush. When Moses saw it, he wondered at the sight. Now that word is sarama, a spectacle. It can mean a thing actually happening, as was the bush, or it can mean a vision. It's the same word that's used of the transfiguration. Tell the sight to no man. It's the same word. Now, there are so many who don't believe the transfiguration was a literal thing. Well, it's the same word. The harama. The sight. And as he drew near to behold, so he's going to scrutinize what is this? And he's going to look and see, what is this? This is the word, see? Behold. The voice of Yahweh came unto him, saying, I am the God of thy fathers, the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses trembled, and durst not behold. He was going to. Oh, he dared now. That was enough. That stopped him. He couldn't scrutinize it as he wanted to do. Thoroughly perceive, to observe fully. He wasn't able to do that. Now the Apostle Paul then goes on to speak of the Apostle. Consider the Apostle. One said, there was the chief Apostle, the chief one sent. Now the Master, in that beautiful prayer recorded in John 17, refers to this 5 times. Sent. Of the Father. John 17, verse 3, this is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. One sent. Thou hast sent. Verse 18, as thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them. They were apostles. He sent them, one sent, into the world. Verse 21. That they all may be one. There's the purpose of the Father, to manifest himself in first the Son and then a multitude in him. They all may be one as thou, Father, art in me, and I in them, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. Verse 23, I in them and thou in me, that they may be made perfect. Translated, consecrated in Hebrews 7. Made perfect in one, that the world may know that thou hast sent me and hast loved them as thou hast loved me. And verse 25, O righteous Father, the world hath not known thee. Remember, the world there was Israel. The world hath not know thee, but I have known thee, and these have known that thou hast sent me. The apostle, one sent. High priest, apostle and high priest. The anointed is referred to as high priest, I find, 11 times. It's interesting how 11 is, goes all through the scriptures. 11 times he's called a high priest. After the order of Melchizedek, of course. High priest of our profession. As we said at the beginning, our profession is a priestly profession. That's our profession, a priestly profession. We profess to be Yahweh's priests in the midst of this evil world. We profess to be his children, we profess to be his holy temple in which he dwells, and his holy priests. It's a very lofty profession. Our profession. Chapter 4, Hebrews chapter 4, and verse 14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Yeshua, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. Oh, we need to do that. Hold fast our profession. Priestly profession. Now, if we go back to Numbers chapter 8, and it's here speaking about the priests under the law, Numbers chapter 8 and verse 24, this is that belongeth unto the Levites from 25 years old and upward. They shall go in to wait upon the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. And in verse 25, from the age of 50 years they shall cease waiting. Now in the margin, the Hebrew for that, you notice, is to war the warfare. And that's what we're doing. It's a warfare against the flesh. Constantly we're having to battle against the flesh. That's why Paul said, oh wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this body of sin, this death? So the apostle Paul, writing to Timothy in the first epistle of Timothy chapter 1, speaks about this as a soldier warring against the flesh. 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 18. This charge I commit unto thee, son Timothy, according to the prophecies which went before on thee, that thou by them mightest war a good warfare. It's the word in him by which he is able to war this warfare. And we can't do it any other way, brothers and sisters. The word in us are able to war the warfare. Now the apostle then goes on to speak of Christ as being faithful unto him. Verse 2, who was faithful to him that appointed him or made him, as also Moses was faithful in all his house. Faithful to him. And that means, that word faithful means trustworthy. Are we trustworthy, brothers and sisters? We've got this wonderful treasure that the Father has entrusted to us. Trustworthy. He was trustworthy. And Paul uses this word five times, and used it of Yahweh in chapter 10. Christ was trustworthy. He's been a wonderful example. So, of course, Yahweh is trustworthy. He's faithful. Chapter 10 and verse 23. Let us hold fast. How many times Paul says this? Hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering. So easy to waver. For he is faithful. That's the same word that promised. He's made promises. He'll keep his promises as long as we keep our side of the bargain. So he was so faithful that the Father speaks from heaven, as we all know, when he came up out of the water, "This is my Son, the Beloved." What a wonderful testimony. The great Creator of the heavens and the earth, "This is my Son, the Beloved, in whom I am well pleased." And that's what he's going to say of us, brothers and sisters. Because through Christ, we can be well pleasing to him. Only through him, of course. Our faith developed through him. And so the Master himself says, "I do always those things that please him." And we need to examine ourselves. Do we always do those things that please him? Of course, we fail so miserably. He did no sin. We fail so miserably. That's why Christ was given, to take away our sins. So he was faithful. And what a testimony now for Moses. As Moses was faithful in all his house. Where does this come from? Numbers chapter 12. Numbers chapter 12. Faithful in all his house. A wonderful man that God spoke to face to face. Never done it with any other man. Face to face he spoke with Moses. And here in this 12th chapter, there was Miriam and Aaron standing up against Moses. How dare they? How dare they stand up against my servant? That's what he calls him. My servant. Verse 6. "Hear now my words," he says to Moses, to Aaron and Miriam. "Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, Yahweh, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and will speak to him in a dream. My servant Moses," and that occurs 7 times, "is faithful in all mine house." You dare say anything against him? "With him will I speak mouth to mouth." Never mind about visions. With him I'll speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And look at this. "The similitude of Yahweh shall he behold." And when was that fulfilled? At the transfiguration. Moses had to be resurrected, and he saw the similitude of Yahweh at the transfiguration. And that's what Brother Thomas says in one of the old heralds, 1856. "Moses beheld the similitude of Yahweh at the transfiguration." I was thrilled when I read that. For anybody that doesn't believe that Moses and Elijah were at the transfiguration, what a pity. How much they're missing. That was when that was fulfilled. He saw the similitude. He saw the Son of God and spoke to him. Now, going on about Moses, this faithful man Moses, verses 3 and 4. "This man was counted worthy of," speaking of Christ first, "this man was counted worthy of more glory than Moses, inasmuch as he who hath builded the house hath more honor than the house. For every house is builded by some man, but he that built all things is God. Counted worthy of more glory than Moses." The builder has more honor than the house. Yahweh is the builder. He is the builder of all things. And the Son is greater by inheritance. Chapter 1, Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 4. Being made so much better than the angels. Here's the Son of God. As he hath by inheritance obtained a more excellent name than they. By inheritance. The only begotten of the Father. So the house becomes Christ's house. The Father's house becomes his house. The Son of God. Now, in John chapter 1, and I wonder how many understand this wonderful book of John, God Manifestation. John chapter 1, verses 1 to 4. Remember that here is God Manifestation. It was God in the beginning. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. Or Yahweh. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him. Now don't let us get mixed up with this. And I've heard so many trying to read into this. That he's talking now talking about Christ. It isn't. It's talking about the Spirit. The Spirit that was in the beginning that created all things. All things were made by him. And without him was not anything made that was made. It's not talking about Jesus. It's talking about the Spirit. Yahweh, the creator of all things. In him was life. And the life was the light of men. The Spirit in the beginning. Now, the Spirit tabernacled in the Son. When the Master came up out of the water, the Spirit came down in the form of a dove. And the Word became flesh. Verse 13, which were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of Yahweh. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. We beheld his glory. The glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him and cried, saying, this was he of whom I spake. He that cometh after me is preferred before me. He was before me. He was before me. Who was before me? The Spirit. The tabernacle in the Son. So the Creator created all things. And it is his house. And he's given that house to his Son. Because the Son is the manifestation of the Father. So the Word tabernacled in the Son. And it is the Word, brethren and sisters, that overcame the flesh. Jesus didn't overcome the flesh. The Word overcame the flesh. Same with us. It is only the Word in us that can overcome the flesh. So in chapter 5 of the Apocalypse, there was no one to open the scrolls. And John was weeping that there was no one in heaven and earth that could open the scroll and look and read what was written therein. Verse 5. One of the elders said unto me, weep not. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, hath prevailed. Overcome. In verse chapters 2 and 3. The same word. Overcome. What overcame? The Root of David. What's the root of David? The Spirit. The Spirit prevailed against the flesh. The Spirit. That's the root of David. The Spirit prevailed. And so, in further on, verse 12 of this same chapter, there's this great rejoicing, saying, worthy, saying with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power. There's seven things here. Complete and perfect, seven things that he receives. Power, riches, wisdom, strength, honor, glory, and blessing. Because the Spirit overcame the flesh. The Word tabernacled in him. So, the Father's house becomes his house. He is the heir of all things. Verse 5. Moses verily was faithful in all his house as a servant, for a testimony of those things which were to be spoken after. Or as Paul puts it elsewhere, a shadow of things to come. Christ was the substance. All that was a shadow pointing to him. He fulfilled it. How wonderful it is. A testimony of those things which were to be spoken after. Moses was faithful as a servant. Now, interesting aside, Moses, those that are interested in numbers, the scriptures are full of numbers. Marvellous this. The value of, just go back with me to Exodus 3. You know, every Hebrew letter has a value. Now, the value of Moses is 345. And the value of verse 14, I will be who I will be, EA Asher EA, is exactly opposite way round. 5, 4, 3. That's marvellous that. Moses 3, 4, 5. I will be who I will be, 5, 4, 3. Add them together, and you've got the value of the name Jesus. 8, 8, 8. Things like that absolutely thrill me. It's got to be the Father's word. No one can write anything like that. The scriptures are full of these things. Wonderful. Now, verse 6. But as Christ as a son over his own house. His own house. Now, it's his house. Because he is the manifestation of the Father. Whose house are we? A son over his own house. Remember chapter 2, verse 3, I and the children. Verse 13, behold, I and the children which God hath given me. That comes from Isaiah chapter 8. I and the children. So that there was Isaiah with his, the children that God had given him, representing Christ and his children, his house. The children that Yahweh hath given me. So the Father's house is given to the Son. He's the heir. Them which thou hast given me. Remember? John chapter 17, that beautiful prayer again. John chapter 17. Those that thou hast given me. I and the children which thou hast given me. The Father has given him his house, his children. All the saints are given to him. John chapter 17, verse 9. I pray for them. I pray not for the world. Remember, brothers and sisters, the world was Israel. He hid the truth in parables. Matthew 13. Why do you speak to them in parables? It's not for them to know the mysteries of the kingdom, but it's for you. Hidden from the world. That was the Jewish world. I pray not for the world, but for them which thou hast given me. Here's the house. The Father has given to him. For they are thine. And he says, all thine are mine. Thou hast given me. All mine are thine. And thine are mine. And I am glorified in them. How lovely. Now today's reading. John chapter 6. None can come unto me. Except the Father draw him. Chapter 6. Verse 44. No man can come to me except the Father which hath sent me draw him. All this going all over the world, preaching. What's being preached, brethren and sisters, is not the sound truth today. It's not Christadelphians drawing, it's the Father that draws them. We've got to be ready to give an answer for the hope that is within us. The light has got to shine from us, that those around will seek for it if the Father draws them to that light. They can't come to the truth without that. The Father, draw him, and I will raise him up at the last day. Verse 65 says it again. He said, therefore said I unto you, that no man can come unto me except it were given unto him of my Father. So it's emphasized. From that time, verse 66, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. They were offended. They couldn't receive the truth. They were flesh-minded. So he turns to his disciples. Will you go away? Will you go away with them? Peter says, Master, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life. And he knew that. For those poor people didn't know it. They didn't know. They hadn't developed minds of the Spirit. Now Paul says, whose house are we if? You get a concordance and look how many times that if occurs, several times in this chapter. If. The conditions. On condition. Provided we hold fast. I've lived long enough in the truth to see faithful brethren who have let go. And you never have believed it possible. Brethren who were steeped in the word. Some say to me, oh, well, he couldn't have had the truth. I know they had the truth, these brethren. And they've left the truth because they didn't hold fast. We've got to hold fast to the end. They didn't. They didn't hold them fast. They fell away. One, he's right into the apostasy now. Never, you would never believe that brother could ever go like that. So it's on the condition we're a part of that house if we hold fast. So Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 5:21, hold fast that which is good. And again, 2 Timothy 1:13, hold fast the form of sound words. And then again he says, hold fast the profession. And if we hold fast, brothers and sisters, we'll be in the kingdom. That's the promise. Hold fast the confidence. Now look at Hebrews 6. Hebrews chapter 6. Verse 11. And we desire that every one of you do show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope unto the end. It's no good if we don't. This full assurance of faith unto the end. He that endures to the end shall be saved. That's a promise. That ye be not slothful. Oh, it's so easy. We see so many slothful. Followers of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Don't be slothful. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her way. Slothful. Now, in chapter 5 and verse 11, Paul says, he's talking about Melchizedek. But there was such a sad state of affairs, parallel to the brotherhood today, not students any longer, wasting their time on television and videos and all the rest of the things of the world, of whom we have many things to say. This Melchizedek, hard to be uttered. Oh yes, every deep things. Seeing ye are dull of hearing. That's the word. Dull. Same word. Dull. How many there are like that today? The majority, brothers and sisters, the majority in the time of Paul was like it. They hadn't grown in the truth. So he goes on. For when for the time ye ought to be teachers, you ought to be teaching the truth now, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God. You're such babes, and are become such as have need of milk, not of strong meat. Everyone that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness. He is a babe. But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, those have grown in truth. It is also translated perfect. Full age. Even those who by reason of use, because they're constantly studying the word, have their senses exercised to discern between good and bad, good and evil. It's only the only way, brothers and sisters, we can discern that which is right and wrong, by absorbing the word. Remember in Proverbs, oh, ye simple ones, how long will ye love simplicity? And fools despise knowledge. And that's how we are today. You know, you hear of brethren having someone in their house week after week instructing them in the truth. Week after week, and then at last, a person or persons, they're ready for baptism, and they're baptized. What happens? They're not invited to the house any longer. It's just like putting a baby on the doorstep, saying, well, now you can look after yourself. And you know why? Because they haven't got any more knowledge to give them. That's all they can teach is first principles of the truth. They've got nothing else to give them. They haven't grown themselves. They're just like the time of Paul. They need to be taught. And when you start bringing out the deeper things of the word, well, whatever are you talking about? Help us Israel. Oh, that's too deep. Help us Israel. Too deep. Eureka, well, you couldn't possibly have Eureka. The apocalypse, whatever's all that about? And that's the state of the brotherhood today. But it was just like that in the time of Paul. So that he says, divisions? Why are there divisions? You're carnal. You haven't developed the spiritual mind. There's only one way to develop the spiritual mind is absorb the word. Feed upon the word that we might grow thereby. So we've got to hold fast to this wonderful truth. This confidence and rejoicing of the hope. Rejoicing in the prospects of being in the kingdom. You know, do we say, I wonder if I'll be there? Brother Thomas says we should never doubt. God has made promises. And he's able to keep those promises. The master said to his disciples, it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. He's gone so far as to call us, brethren and sisters, from the darkness of the world. How did we come to the truth? And why did God call us? And then he gave his only begotten Son that our sins might be forgiven. When we were yet sinners, before we were ever born, Christ died for us. And the sins of the righteous were laid upon him. So we are therefore accounted as without sin. Although we fail so miserably. We sin every day. We can't help it. But the Father knows our frame. Remembers that we are dust. So we've got to be positive about the truth. We've got to believe that we're going to be in the kingdom. Abraham believed he was going to be in the kingdom. Hebrews 11. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. And were persuaded of them. And embraced them. And confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims in the earth. They knew they were going to be in the kingdom. Joshua and Caleb were going through the wilderness. And here is Paul talking about Israel going through the wilderness. Going through the wilderness. And they didn't believe that God could bring them into the promised land. So he didn't bring them into the promised land. They didn't believe it, so he didn't bring them in. But Joshua and Caleb believed God. Joshua and Caleb went into the promised land. God is faithful. Paul tells us so. God is faithful. He'll keep his promise. Let's be faithful. So Jesus, for the joy set before him, endured. We've got to keep this confidence and rejoicing firm unto the end, brothers and sisters. Keep it constantly before us. Absorb the word. You know, you get brethren saying, oh, because we don't know what the kingdom's like. And they misquote passages like that Paul quotes from Isaiah, I have not seen nor ear heard. Misquoting it. It's not talking about the kingdom. It's talking how we get to the kingdom. Through the Son. He hath revealed it unto us, says Paul. So we do know what the kingdom's going to be like. Not, we can only see it through a glass darkly, as Paul says. But we've got to have a vision of the kingdom, the glorious kingdom, the earth filled with God's glory, and us reigning with as kings and priests. So we've got to be firm unto the end. Keep it constantly before us. Steadfast. Verse 14. Steadfast. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of the confidence steadfast unto the end. Steadfast unto the end. Chapter 6 and verse 19. Which hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which entereth into that within the veil, whither the forerunner is for us entered. We fled for refuge, he says in verse 16. And so this is what we've done, brethren and sisters. He that endures to the end. Either the end of the Mosaic Age, because that was nearest to the time of Paul, of course. He didn't know it was going to be 2,000 years. They were living in the end of the age. That's the background of the New Testament. The end of the Mosaic Age. Christ's coming was imminent. Not 2,000 years away. He stands at the door. Now we're at the end of the Mosaic, the Gentile Age. He that endures to the end shall be saved. Doesn't matter which end it is. Even if we die tonight, we should be ready for him. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee the crown of life. Let us hold fast, firm, unto the end.